Oh, the grand features of human progress. The trophies of the best of the best are everywhere, it seems, these days, particularly at the Olympics, where the best in the world are showcased in every event.
Here's Blake, here's Bolt. Usain Bolt explodes, and he's still the king of the 100.
43.94 for Kerani James, a huge personal best.
Here comes the cross.
Oh, it's in! Alex Morgan has done it!
Fastest people in the world, highest jumpers in the world. While we celebrate human physical progress at the Olympics and the mental toughness and large-brained intelligence that comes with it, nothing in civilization is possible without the miracle of consciousness, that sense of being awake, able to detach ourselves from physical reality, to imagine the future and remember the past, the knowledge that we are, in fact, alive. Everything proceeds from consciousness. Vladimir Nabokov, the writer, had one of the great quotes about consciousness, in my opinion. "What surprises you in life," he said, "the marvel of consciousness, that sudden window swinging open on a sunlit landscape amidst the night of non-being." Ooh, I love that. Consciousness is the central theme and the main character, you might say, in a beautiful new book from neuroscientist Giulio Tononi, a psychiatrist on the faculty at the University of Wisconsin. Phi, a voyage from the brain to the soul, is told in the voice of an imagined Galileo, a man who opened the way for the objectivity of science. Giulio Tononi, first of all, welcome to the program.
Hello.
And why did you choose Galileo to be such a central character here? What is he searching for, and how is he a metaphor for all of our quest to understand consciousness?
You said it. Galileo is recognized as somebody who started science by detaching it from subjectivity and make it into something objective, that we could measure things and understand things that way. But there is something in the world of science which is the subject of science himself, that is, man. And that cannot be necessarily understood the same way if we give away subjectivity. So Galileo is now on a journey to understand how experience, consciousness, subjectivity can arise out of matter. When he was a young man, he had decided that he had to forget about subjectivity and just understand the laws that govern what happens around us. But becoming an old man, he sort of understands that in the end, what matters is subjectivity itself, and he wants to bring it back under the realm of science.
The title of your book is Phi, A Voyage from the Brain to the Soul, which in many ways, through many great stories and thought experiments that I want to talk about in just a moment, is, as you say, a journey from the brain to the soul, from objectivity to really a re-understanding of what the importance of subjectivity is all about. Do you think the history of civilization from whatever it was, tens of thousands of years ago to the moment of Galileo was a journey from the soul to the brain, where we began to understand objectivity? What happened so long ago?
In fact, as is mentioned in the book, in many ways it is a history of displacements. Galileo was at the center of the first displacement, the one triggered by himself and Copernicus. That is the one that, we recognized that the Earth is not the center of the universe. And it took some time to come to terms with that. And then there was a large second displacement brought about largely by Darwin, in which we understood that, life started with very, very small organisms, and there is a long thread that takes us back to them. So that displaced us from, again, the center of creation. And again, we are struggling to come to terms with this. But perhaps the most important displacement of all, the most worrisome of all, is the third one, which is that the mind, consciousness itself, experience, that is, who we are, is nothing but a pack of neurons. In fact, many scientists do actually think, or at least proceed that way. Francis Crick, in his book, The Astonishing Hypothesis, said it very clearly. He said that what we have discovered is that you, your joys and your sorrows, your memories and your ambitions, your sense of identity and free will, are no more than the behavior of a vast assembly of nerve cells and the associated molecules. In other words, you are nothing but a pack of neurons. And this displacement is perhaps the one that burns the most, because if that is true, if there is nothing but a pack of neurons, then meaning seems to, you know, leave the universe in which we live.
And one of the explorations here in this book, and it's really beautifully done, and I'd love it if you could give me a sense of why you chose to incorporate so much art and visual examples in here, because this book really reminds me of Robert Pirsig's Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, which was a dialogue with a character named Phaedrus. Also, Gödel, Escher, Bach, which is a beautiful book all about abstraction back in the 1980s that was a real bestseller. And I think this, you know, is very much in that parade of interesting looks at the mind and the brain. But what you're exploring here is that those neurons somehow create a system where information creates meaning and reality, that complex information in networks is a way of understanding consciousness. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes. The title of the book, Phi, is the Greek letter that, if you look at how it's written down, the capital letter Phi stands for, you know, a capital I, which is information, and a circle inscribed on it, which stands for integration. And informational integration is the heart of a theory of consciousness that says that consciousness is a very, very special thing. It's an intrinsic property of very special systems of elements, like neurons, which can be thought of metaphorically as an extraordinary shape, like a diamond with a trillion faces, which can come about only under very special conditions. In fact, one of the most useful things to think about is when we study as scientists the functioning of the brain, this extraordinary complex organ. Well, within the brain itself, we know some rather remarkable things. There is, for instance, one big part of the brain called the cerebellum in the back of your head, which has literally billions of neurons and even more connections. It has more neurons than the cerebral cortex. It's extraordinarily complicated indeed. It is connected to, you know, the motor outputs. It has inputs from various sensory modalities, you know, sight and sound,
right.
And so on and so forth. And yet, if you take it away, consciousness doesn't change a bit. Essentially, this is a very, very complicated thing. It is a piece of brain, and it has nothing to do with consciousness. But if you take out some other parts of the brain, larger in the cerebral cortex, then suddenly you not only, you know, block the functioning of a piece of matter, but you yourself disappear and don't exist anymore. So if you look at these paradoxes, you understand that scientifically we can indeed try and get a better understanding of consciousness. What is it that makes some parts of the brain generate experience, subjectivity, and others, which are equally complicated, don't do anything at all?
And describe the various thought experiments in here. There's one with a photodiode, a light that can go on or off, that has a small little function that extrapolates to what computers do on some level. And there's also the idea of where does our consciousness go when we sleep. Can you explore those a little bit?
Yes, thought experiments are very important in the history of science. In fact, Galileo himself was a master of thought experiments. Sometimes you don't even need to do the experiment and you sort of glimpse at the answer. In the case of consciousness, my opinion is that you must start from thought experiments, because if it weren't for consciousness itself, we wouldn't even know that it is there. If we were to simply study things like brains or computers or matter in general, we would not suspect that behind that there is somebody experiencing something unless we actually have that experience, that is, we are conscious ourselves. So the first thought experiment on which much of the work, the theoretical work on consciousness is based, is simply wake up in a dark room in total silence, let's say in an hotel in a city that you don't know about, and before you realize why you are there, who you are exactly, and all of those other things, well, at first you have just a pure experience of darkness and silence. And why that seems to be very simple, and why that seems to be utterly mysterious in terms of what goes on in the brain, why should the brain working in a certain way generate this experience? The first thing to realize is that experience is what it is. It's pure darkness and silence, because it is one out of literally trillions and trillions and trillions of other experiences you could have had think of every frame of every possible movie. But it was precisely that one that you had. And one out of many is the essence of what information is. So
right.
This kind of thought experiment tells you consciousness is extraordinarily informative.
And it's all about choices that we make inadvertently or very, very consciously. You're sure that you're awake now, right?
I hope I am, yes. In
Absolutely.
Fact, you put it right. And, you know, sleep is, as I started by saying, you know, consciousness can be defined as what disappears when you fall into dreamless sleep. Sleep is another great scientific paradox. When you fall asleep early in the night, and then let's say after 20 minutes that you've been asleep, I try and wake you up. Very often, you have absolutely nothing to say. As far as you are concerned.
I often have nothing to say when I'm asleep, although my wife tells me differently. Giulio Tononi, thank you so much. The author of the book, Phi, A Voyage from the Brain to the Soul, all about consciousness. Thanks so much.